Well, it's good to see everyone who's here this morning, and we do have visitors. We welcome you here. This has been kind of a crazy year. I'm just thinking this morning, we've been getting snow. Everybody knows that every couple of days, two, three, 4 days. But I don't remember in all the time I've been up here this many weekends or this many Sundays affected by the weather. Some of you guys, I'm sure, do, but I don't. But nonetheless, appreciate the effort everyone is making to come out as much as you can. And as we continue to look at our theme this morning, and we will do that, we'll talk about fulfilling my purpose in the church. I do want to make one announcement, repeat one announcement. If you were not here when we first started, the song practice that we were going to have at 5 o'clock, we're just going to postpone that till next month sometime. Hopefully everybody, the weather will be different and everybody will be able to be here. If you will, let's consider for a moment this morning, though, the idea of the church and my place in it. We've talked a little bit this quarter. We tried to, stay on course with the theme. And we've talked about the idea of what we all bring to the table. If you remember, I used the analogy using that phrase, and I used the analogy of growing up and how we would have those get-togethers down south. Decoration Day, we called it, where we put flowers on all the graves and all of that kind of thing of family members. And then the big extended family. Those are the only family reunion type things I ever remember. But where that part of my grandmother's family, a lot of people would come together, everybody would bring a dish, that kind of thing. We'd have a great big feast. I've used that analogy to talk about the idea of the church, and I think it fits. We're going to look this morning, though, from the standpoint of the fact that, as Tyler read a moment ago, we are priests. Now, that's probably not terminology we use a lot. We talk about members of the church. We talk about, individuals in the church. We talk sometimes about being servants. But I doubt very often in just everyday language of talking about being a member of the church that people discuss it from the standpoint of, hey, I'm a priest, and so are you. The church is the temple of the Lord, and we're all priests serving in the temple. And yet, that's exactly the way the New Testament describes it in several passages. The passage, obviously, that was just read for us, but also another passage that I think you may find a little surprising at just how much language that has to do with being priest is used in the passage, though it's rarely ever translated that way. And we're going to talk about and focus on that passage in particular. So this morning, let's take a look at fulfilling my purpose in the church as a priest in God's service. Now let's go back, if you will, to begin with, and I'm not going to stay very long in the Old Testament, but a beautiful passage in Isaiah 61. Jesus read from this passage. You remember when he went into Nazareth, he called for this passage and read from it. And if you remember, he said, today this is fulfilled in your ears or in your hearing. He was talking about our time. He was talking about us. This Old Testament prophecy points to the fact that Christians are to be, and they were to be when Isaiah wrote it, priests of the Lord. Let's read it together. It's very beautiful. Beginning in verse 1 of Isaiah 61, the Spirit of the Lord God is upon me. Obviously, Jesus quoted that. Because the Lord has anointed me to preach good tidings unto the meek, he has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty or freedom to the captives, and the opening of the prison to them that are bound, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. Now, that's what Jesus quoted and then made the point that it was fulfilled in his day, or beginning with the gospel. But let's go on and notice what else is said here. To proclaim that acceptable year of the Lord, and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all that mourn, to appoint unto them that mourn in Zion, to give unto them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness, that they might be called trees of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, and that he might be glorified. And they shall build the old waste. They shall raise up former desolations. And I think this speaks figuratively of our lives. They shall raise up the former desolations. And they shall repair the waste cities, the desolations of many generations. And strangers even shall stand and feed your flocks. And the sons of the alien or the foreigner shall be your plowmen and your vine dressers. But you as he speaks to his people. You shall be named the priest of the Lord. Notice, no longer limited to one tribe or a part of God's people, but all of God's people will be called or named the priest of the Lord. Men shall call you the ministers or servants of our God. You shall eat the riches of the Gentiles, and in their glory shall you boast yourselves. And of course, he goes on. We were to be priests of the Lord. Now, in the Old Testament, a primary duty, and we often think of just this duty, even though there were a number of different courses, different orders of priests, and they did all kinds of service in the temple. In fact, they did all the service within the temple, both men and women, for that matter. But a primary duty of priests in the Old Testament was to make daily sacrifices, not just the high priest on the Day of Atonement going into the most holy place, but daily sacrifices. All those that you read about in Leviticus that goes on for chapter after chapter, where you would commit a sin, or you might have committed a sin of ignorance or whatever it might be. But they made daily sacrifices. The Hebrew writer notes that in chapter 10 and verse 11. And Exodus 29 and verses 38 and 39 summarizes a whole lot of that and makes that point. Well, today, obviously, Christians are priests in the temple of the Lord. And we likewise make these daily sacrifices. Now, last year, in the last quarter, when we were talking about the idea of glorifying the Lord, I looked at a couple of these passages, and you may even recall I had a similar chart to this, and I talked about sacrificing ourselves to the glory of God. But I want to go back and focus more on the idea of the sacrifices themselves and the daily service. So we see that in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verses 5 and 9, as Tyler read, we are that priesthood, that royal priesthood, etc. I want us to focus, however, and I'd like for you to turn with me to Romans 12. This is the passage I was talking about. Now, it's interesting in Romans 12, and especially if you study this and you look at it in different translations, or if you read it from the original, you see that Paul called upon a lot of terminology that had to do with just what you see in this picture. It had to do with priests making sacrifices. Now, most of the time when you read this in our English translations, occasionally you will see some indication of that, but not often. And that's really unfortunate because there's a beautiful picture being made here of Christians as priests. Let's focus on a couple of verses. Paul says in verse 1, you can either look up here or note in your Bible, I beseech you, or I beg you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Let's kind of break that down, and we're going to do a little bit of an exegetical study this morning, but let's break it down for a moment, because the language is rich here. I beseech you, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present. This word present is, if you look in the original, and you look at a lexicon or whatever, a dictionary of the original language, it's the action of a priest. That picture you saw a moment ago of a priest taking a goat or a heifer or whatever it might be and putting it up on the altar, that putting it on the altar is this word present. Sometimes this is translated yield. But it's the idea of the action of the priest as of sacrifices, something that is consecrated to God. Now notice what he's saying, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice. Now, we understand that. Here I am, I'm a priest of God. I don't make animal sacrifices, but I present my body. I sacrifice myself to God. Well, this morning we're going to ask the question, well, what does that mean? From a practical standpoint, what is God asking of me on a daily basis? What he asked in the Old Testament a priest was to receive those animals that were brought to the temple or the tabernacle before it, and someone said, I've sinned, or whatever it might be, and offer that sacrifice, burn it, literally kill it, and burn it to God. Well, what is it that God is asking of me? I'm a priest. I am on a daily basis to present, to lay a sacrifice on the altar. I know that I'm to lay myself there. It's my body that's to be given as a living sacrifice. Or 1 Peter 2, I'm to make spiritual sacrifices. But what does that mean? Well, Paul goes on to say that you present your body as a living sacrifice. It is holy. In other words, it's set apart. It's different. It's godlike. And it is acceptable to God. And it is your reasonable service. What does he mean by that? It's what you can reason. You can logically think about it. If God is asking me as a priest to give on a daily basis, what does that mean? It's logical. I need to think through it. I need to hear what's being said in this passage. And I need to follow this instruction here and give myself accordingly. It's not just some general statement that's being made. And I think oftentimes we do a disservice to this passage by going to Romans 12, maybe reading just verse 1 or verses 1 and 2, and then going away from it. But that's not all that is said here. So let's look at it further. It is your reasonable service. And again, if you look at this word, it is a word that had to do with priests. It is that divine ministration. Now, it's, you know, big technical language. What does that mean? It means daily service. Divine ministration, service in the temple. If you were to look at what the priest did in the Old Testament, and this is what it's literally saying. You go back there and you read Exodus and you read Leviticus and some in Deuteronomy, and you see what the priest did, and you say to yourself, now, in a parallel situation, that's me today. No, there's not animals, and no, there's not a physical temple, and on and on. But in a parallel situation, that's me. That's my work on a daily basis. Now, notice what he's saying. Look down in verse 6. Because again, the passage goes on. One of the things that he says down in verse 6 is, having then, in other words, based on what I've just said, having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us. And then he begins to get specific about it. So what he's saying is, you on a daily basis are to be reasoning, thinking, logically looking at this, saying, what do I do? What am I called by the Lord to do? What gifts, quote unquote, and these aren't spiritual gifts, I'm convinced of that in Romans 12. What gifts have I been given? What abilities we've talked about before, what talents, how might I reason that God would have me use what I can do, and maybe even what I do really well, on a daily basis to serve in the temple? You see, he's saying, you give yourself, your body, a living sacrifice. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean engage in a ritual, as sometimes in the world this happens, where I literally allow myself to be nailed to a cross and lifted up? Is that what he's talking about? I don't think so. Is he talking about the idea, as some did, if we went back about 1800 years, it became very popular for a couple of hundred years back there, to sacrifice yourself? For example, like building a platform upon a, high upon a pole or whatever, and literally living up there for years at a time. Sacrificing everything in life, every joy of life, everything in life. Is that what he's saying? Well, no. No, he's saying it needs to be logical what you do. You need to reason. I have gifts. I know God has given to me the ability to do certain things, and that's what he wants. He wants it on a daily basis as I serve as a priest in his service. Now, let's go further with that. We looked at a couple of passages, and I'm not going to reteach these passages, but let's summarize them. In fact, I'd like for you to turn to Matthew 6, because I went through about half of it. I'm going to go back there and spend a couple more minutes there. But remember in Matthew 25, in verses 14 and 15, let's summarize it. Remember Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is as a man going into a far country. He called unto him his servants and delivered unto them, distributed to them his goods. And he gave unto each one according to his individual ability, he gave talents. Those represent opportunities. So service to Jesus as his priest requires me first to recognize, to identify, and develop my talents, my abilities. Now remember, there was a slight nuance of difference between talents and abilities. One more the idea of what you're naturally born with. One more the idea of what you acquire or develop in life. You may have some natural ability, but you need to develop it. And so it becomes a real skill, if I can get that out. So service to Jesus as a priest requires me to recognize and develop my talents, my abilities. And it also requires me to be diligent and to identify the opportunities. Jesus gave to one five talents, five pieces of money, to another two, to another one. Those are opportunities. Jesus is saying, you have ability, you can use it. Even if it's just very simple, where you take the one talent, the one piece of money, and you lend it and get some interest back, you can do something. So no one can say, I can't do anything. I'm not talented, I don't have any abilities, I can't do anything. No, you have to be diligent. Again, think back to Romans 12. Your reasonable service. You've got a reason. You've got to think. You're expected by the Lord to do that. How might I use my talents, my abilities? Even be creative. The Lord is giving that license to us. You be creative and figure out what you can do. Recognize the opportunity you have around you. And then as you go further, and if you're looking at Matthew chapter 6, it requires me to seize upon those opportunities. And as Jesus put it in Matthew 6, to store up. Remember, literally pile up, heap up treasures in heaven. And as you go further in that passage, and let's do that. In fact, let's look at Matthew 6 for a second here. Beginning in verse 19, lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. I mean, we do that, right? We collect things, and we, you know, save our money, and we invest in things. We do all of that. And to a degree, there's nothing wrong with that. Some of that is just being very wise and increasing our ability to do good for our families and for others. And yet, you can't take it with you. You know that. I know that. It's not a lasting treasure. It doesn't endure past this life, saving for the good that it leaves behind. But Jesus said, that's the point. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Store up things that are lasting, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through or steal. When you do a good deed for someone, when you're kind to someone, when you help someone to learn the truth and bring them to Jesus, no thief can steal that, saving for Satan if we allow it. But no thief on earth can break into our house and steal it. No corruption, no decay takes over that and ruins it. That's lasting. So Jesus said, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Now let's notice what he goes on to say. Again, notice the point. It requires focus on a single purpose. What is that? I am a priest. Every day. All day. You know, when you're a preacher, it's somewhat easy to remember that. Because if you ever forget it, other people will remind you. You know, you're a preacher, Jack. You know, you ought to be doing this or that. But the point is, we're priests. That's my purpose in life. I serve Jesus. I decided to do that the day that I obeyed the gospel and I was baptized. If I didn't, then I really was not obeying the Lord. I'm a priest, and that's my purpose in life. And that really is my single greatest purpose. And I need to focus on that. It needs to be clear in my mind who I am and what I am. Listen to Jesus when he says, verse 22, the light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body will be full of light. You see what he's saying? If you've got a single mind, single purpose, and you focus on who you are and what you are, you'll be full of light. Your life will just exemplify the light of the Lord. But if your eye is evil, or cloudy, or dark, some translations say, then the whole body is full of darkness. You know exactly what that's like. We all understand that. Go out into a bright, sunny day. It's bright and shiny out there today. And with the glare off the snow and so forth, it can almost be blinding. Put on a pair of sunglasses and immediately it gets a lot darker. Put something completely over your face, cover yourself completely, and you can get to the point where no light at all can get in. And if it can't get in, then in a spiritual sense, he can't get out. And it's kind of like the person, you know, that says, I want to hear it. Don't tell me about it. I don't want to hear it. It's not that they don't believe what you're saying. They just don't want to be reminded of it. Don't talk to me about that. Don't tell me about that. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to see it. I don't want to take notice of the reality of it. Jesus says, If your eye is dark, cloudy, your whole body will be full of darkness. And therefore the light that is in thee be darkness. How great is that darkness? How will it affect you if you shut out the light? Now notice the point he makes. What am I saying, Jesus would say? No man can serve two masters. You can't have both light and darkness. You've either got one or the other. And the more you shut out the light, the more dark it becomes. I mean, that's just simple, isn't it? If it's a dark night and the light is on, you can end that really quickly by going over and now it's dark. When you go down into, I don't know if any of you have ever visited caverns, but like, you know, down in Virginia and Kentucky, you know, Mammoth Cave and all of that. If you've ever gone into a place like that and you go underground, it is absolutely dark. It's the darkest you have ever imagined. It is completely dark. You can hold your hand in front of your face. You can't see anything. Then someone turns on a flashlight. Instantly. You can see everything. You can see everything around you. You can see everybody. But you can end that very quickly by just simply shutting off the flashlight. It's a great illustration because it's exactly what Jesus is saying here. It may not happen as quickly as that. But gradually, it will happen. You will either hate the one and love the other. You will either hold to the one and disregard the other. That's what will happen. The person that tries to walk down the middle, like Elijah's limping between two sides, he tries to hold on to the world. He tries to hold on to Jesus. It's impossible. It's like trying to have light and darkness at the same time. You will get to the point where it will grow darker and darker and darker until all the light is shut out. Or you will get to the point where more and more and more and more light comes into you and you will not be dark. You cannot walk the line between the two thinking that you can hold on to both and love both your whole life. It's impossible. Elijah said it and then Jesus said it. It requires that I focus. That I have a single purpose in my life. And it will become clearer as my love for Christ grows. A priest in His service. Let's go back to Romans 12 and close out our lesson this morning. Paul said, I say to everyone among you. Now notice this in verse 3. This is very interesting here. I say to everyone among you not to be high-minded. Notice what he says, above what is proper. Or in the King James, it says to think more highly of yourself than you ought to think. Now, when you look at that passage, you ever stop to say, wait a minute, being high-minded is wrong, isn't it? I asked you a question in the bulletin today, when would it ever be right to be high-minded? Because if you look at the definition, it doesn't help much. It really means what you think it means. It means to have high notions. It literally means to linger or go on thinking that way. Thinking beyond or above, notice, what is proper. And that's exactly what Paul emphasizes here. Is it ever proper, right, to consider yourself better or higher or above someone else? Your inclination would be to say, no. It's never right to think that way. But yet the Bible is saying, don't be high-minded above what is proper. Literally, this word means what is necessary. Or inevitable. I want to tell you, I think there are times as a priest when it is not just okay, but necessary that you recognize in some sense that you are above or higher than someone else. Now, before you crucify me, let me explain that. Are you a strong Christian? Have you been at it for a long time? Do you know things? There may very well be a person sitting across from you in a pew that is, as a human being, is every bit as good as you. And as a Christian, is just the same as you in Jesus Christ. But they're weaker. And they're younger. And they're more vulnerable. If you come up to me and you begin to jump all over me and you tell me how wrong I am about things that I've studied for nearly 40 years now, I can handle that. I know what I believe. I know why I believe it. If you walk up to someone who doesn't know and doesn't have a clue and you begin to tell them in some way how worthless they are because they don't, you can blow them out. They can walk out of here and never come back. It's important that I understand that I am above. I've grown. I know. I've got 40 years experience as a priest. And the other guy over there, he may have been baptized last week. I need to think exactly as I should think toward other people. Now notice what he goes on. That's what he's saying. But to be sober-minded, which is a word that means to be sensible, to have a sound view, to maintain a balanced outlook. That's exactly the way it should be toward each one. When I look at the guy sitting across from me, I need to understand, I've been a Christian 40 years, he's been a Christian a week. Or I'm 55 years old in a couple of months, 56, and that person's 12 or 17. I need to know that and keep that in mind. But by the same token, that six-year-old that walks up to me is exactly the person in Matthew 18 that Jesus would say to me, Michael, you need to be converted and be just like that. So I got a lot to learn from those kids. So the point is, a balanced outlook says, let me maintain in my mind what I should, gaining from them, and you can from everybody, where you can. Giving to them what you can. And always understanding that you're a priest and you're serving the Lord, not yourself. As God has allotted a measure of faith. You like that? Let me do that again. As God has allotted a measure of faith. Let's single this phrase out. Because notice what else Paul says here. Look at verse 4. Because now he explains it. He says, let me compare it to the human body. Just as we have, all of us, we have members in one body. This is one body up here, one beautiful body, you know, with all these body parts. And they don't all have the same function. We don't all have the same place in the temple. And we don't all play the same part in His service. As I said, there were numerous courses of priests in the Old Testament. And there were women who served in the temple. And they all did different things so that as a whole group, it was a beautiful thing, wasn't it? And exactly what the Lord wanted. When every duty was fulfilled as a priest in His service, then exactly what God wanted in the temple was fulfilled. That's where we need to be. And that's what He's saying. Look how He gets specific. Let's close out with this. We have gifts, verse 4, differing according to the grace that is given. We don't all have the same function, place, part, duty to fulfill. But look at the specifics in Romans 12. When He says, for example, can you communicate? Can you prophesy? But we think of prophesy as what Elijah did. But the idea of can you communicate to other people? Can you teach in that, you know, in that way, almost professional way? Do you have that ability? Can you serve? Can you be an administrator? Because the word for servant here, and some of your translations may indicate that, is the word we usually translate as deacon. Can you administrate? Can you take charge of a task and see that it gets done? Like feeding those widows, remember, in Jerusalem. Can you teach? Can you teach a class? Can you teach one-on-one? Can you teach somebody by what you do and what you say and the example that you fulfill? Can you comfort people? Are you someone that's good at encouraging people? There are people that need it. People lose loved ones and people have people in their family that are very sick. Can you do that? Will you take time to do that? Call them on the phone. Send them a card. Send them a text, a tweet. Will you go see them? Can you comfort people? Is that your ability that God has given you? Will you give? Are you a generous person? And when the Lord blesses you, like Bill said, it is more blessed to give than receive. Are you generous? As it goes on to say, will you lead? And will you be consistent in that? That's the idea in it. Not just that you'll take leadership by telling other people what to do, but are you consistent in what you tell them to do? Are you a merciful person? Can you be gracious to people? Show mercy. You know, that's one of the basic attributes of God, and it is something that really can attract people. Mercy is the idea of returning to someone what they don't deserve. You know? And that's tough. Are you the kind of person that can really love? Love other people and be unbiased about it. Not showing hypocrisy, not being the kind of person that chooses who you love and who you don't. Prejudice, etc. Are you the kind of person that esteems others? Do you look for the good in them? Whether it's that brand new Christian or 6-year-old or 93-year-old, do you look for the good in that person and take from that, gain from that? Are you the kind of person that is fervent, fired up? You know, we need to see that. Sometimes you come in here, it's been a hard day, a hard week, right? Some of us have had a hard life. It's good to see people fired up. You know, it really helps sometimes to see that. People that are excited about being here and excited about being a Christian. Can you be excited? Can you rejoice? And more than that, can you rejoice in God during times of trouble? That's something that's extremely important. In fact, do you handle things with prayer? Are you a person that will pray no matter what? Beyond that, will you make your contribution? You know, when he says here, distributing to the needs of the saints, we do that in a great way by just making our contribution. How important is that to you? Is it important just that I fumble around and find a dollar? Or is it something that I really plan with purpose? I know what I'm giving, and they can count on it. Because it's going to be there regardless. If I go on vacation, I double up next week. It'll be there. Are you the kind of person, for example, that is hospitable? Do you do things for other people? Take them in, feed them, and not just ask them for it, but do for others. Are you the kind of person, for example, Paul talks about, you'll bless them, give a good word to them, even if they hurt you. Someone hurts your feelings, how do you react to that? What do you give back? Are you the kind of person that can rejoice when things are going great for somebody else and not for me? Can you weep with other people? Do you care when people lose someone they love? Or when they have a loved one that is very sick or dying? Does it even bother you? Do you care about it? Do you pray for them? Do you have a good, kind word for them? Are you there for them? Are you the kind of person, for example, that promotes peace? Do you live peaceably with everybody as much as lies in you? That's what a priest does. They want peace. They don't want trouble. They don't want to run around disturbing things, causing trouble, dividing people, trying to get a little group in their favor against another little group at church. Are you the kind of person that overcomes evil with good? You've been mean to me? Then let me see if I can win you over to myself by some good that I do. Are you that person? Why? When I look at that list in Romans 12 and I realize what it means to be a priest, that's what it means. And if we all joined our efforts at this place and did that, what would we have? None of that, you notice. None of that is asking beyond what you're able, and for most of those things, none of that is what I can't do. And that's what God chose to put in the list. Will you give yourself in sacrifice to the Lord? You're here this morning and you're not a Christian. You believe in Jesus. He's the Son of God. You'll confess that He is, change your life, and be baptized for forgiveness of your sins. If you're here this morning and you're a person who's done that, but you look at your life and you say, unfortunately, I've not been that person. I've not been a priest in the service. I want to change that and ask for you to pray for me today. Won't you please come while we stand and sing?